Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. It sounded like the perfect afternoon. Ice cream and then playing in the park with her little brother. That's what 5-year-old Dulce Maria Alavez was doing on September 16th, 2019. Dulce Maria's mom, Noema, stopped and got ice cream for her two kids and her 8-year-old sister. They then drove to a park in their hometown of Bridgeton, New Jersey. Dulce Maria and her little brother got out to play while Noema stayed in the car to help her sister with her homework. Sometime later, Noema looked up and realized that she couldn't see her children. She exited the car and entered every parent's worst nightmare. She found her son, Manuel, with his ice cream on the ground. He was crying, and Dulce was nowhere to be found. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Dulce Maria Alavez. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. This story was another listener suggestion. My sister Kaylee, who is also a Patreon member, brought this up to me as a case that has stuck with her. And when she pulled up Dulce's photo on her phone, I immediately recognized her. Like, the picture was familiar to me. But honestly, I thought this was one of those cases that had just kind of been quickly resolved. Unfortunately, there are still very few answers nearly 2 years later. But before we get started, I do want to give a quick shout out, speaking of Patreon, to our new show that we've launched only on Patreon, Unplugged from the Darkness. So this is Ethan's show, and it's short. So they're like little bite-sized episodes, like 15, 20 minutes, somewhere in there. And Ethan talks about like mental health issues and books that he's read, things like that. It's very different. It's not true crime related. In fact, that's the point.
That is
it.
The point, yeah, is to just take a break from all of the true crime. I think that a lot of our listeners, and myself included, get caught up in nothing but true crime podcasts over and over and over again, or reading news articles or anything like that. So it's really just, you know, once a week, 10, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, where we just kind of do a little mental health check-in and talk about various topics to get our brains off of true crime, at least for a little bit.
Right. Except it's really just kind of become couples therapy for us.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about mental health issues and not include your spouse when you're
talking
to your spouse about mental health issues.
So. Yes, fair. But I really wanted to bring it up in this week's episode because we just released our third episode of Unplugged from the Darkness. And this time we finally get to talk about how terrible Ethan is. So I just really want to give it a big plug. Right
just
now,
so
because
that everybody
of that.
Gets to listen to me being self-deprecating and you making fun of me.
yeah, more of that. So anyway, yeah, that is on our Patreon. If you're interested, you can go to patreon.com/attwgpod.
And I'll make sure that episode 4 refocuses back on you.
Yeah, okay, never mind. Forget it. don't listen. But for now, let's get over to Bridgeton, New Jersey, and discuss the 2019 disappearance of little Dulce Maria Alavez. I wanted to cover this case for a few reasons. One, like I said, it was a listener suggestion. And two, we try to cover cases of missing persons of color as often as possible. And this falls into that category. Dulce Maria is Hispanic, but also a big element of this case is the public response to Noema Alavez Perez, Dulce's mother. We, as a public, love few things more than raking women through the mud, and Noema certainly received her share of that. She was irresponsible. She wasn't acting in the right way. Her emotions were wrong. She didn't say the right things, like just et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do want to talk about that as well, because it's a huge issue in some of these cases where tragedy strikes children. So let's get on with it. Dulce Maria Alavez was born on April 25th, 2014 to Noema Alavez Perez. Noema was only 14 years old when she had Dulce. So Noema split custody with her parents, Dulce's grandparents, from the very beginning.
14?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and I did learn a little bit about Dulce Maria's father, and we do talk about him a bit in this episode, but I'm not sure how old he was. So I'm not exactly sure what type of situation we're talking about here.
Okay, well, regardless.
Regardless, yeah. It's not great. But Dulce's father, Edgar Perez, was around when Dulce was born and into her early years. However, he was deported back to Mexico when Dulce Maria was 3 and reportedly had little contact with her after that. Noemi described her daughter as a sweet girl who is nice and loving. She told ABC News in May of 2021, quote, "She likes to pretend that she was always the princess. She likes to be around like smaller kids. She always likes to give hugs and kisses," end quote. September 16th, 2019 was a beautiful 72-degree day in Bridgeton. The perfect weather to eat ice cream and play in the park. Noemi took the kids to a Sunoco and let the 3 children pick out ice cream from the case. Surveillance video from the store captured the last known images of Dulce Maria as she chose a coconut water ice and handed it to her mom just before 4 p.m. Dulce was wearing a yellow t-shirt with an elephant on the front, black and white checked pants with a flower pattern, and white sandals. Noemi paid for the ice creams and bought a few lottery tickets. They then headed for the Bridgeton City Park, which is located behind Bridgeton High School on Burt Street. Noemi let Dulce Maria and Manuel, her little brother, get out of the car to go play, while she stayed behind with her sister, Camila.
This is Noemi's?
Noemi's sister, yeah. So she was eight years old at the time. So she was Dulce Maria's aunt.
Okay.
So Noemi is sitting in the car with Camila. She starts scratching off the lottery tickets, and her plan was to help Camila with her homework. But they're not even there long enough to get that started. So accounts differ a little bit about what happens next. I do think that Noemi herself is the one who says what I opened the show with, that she realized she couldn't see her kids, so she got out of the car, at which point she found Manuel crying. Other accounts say that he ran up to the car crying. In either case, Noemi does admit that there was a time period where the children were out of her sight because there is a hill that partially obstructed her view.
How old is Dulce Maria at this point?
She's 5.
She's 5.
And her little brother Manuel is 3.
Okay.
But the time period between when they arrived at the park and when Noemi realizes that Dulce Maria is no longer with her little brother is only about 10 to 15 minutes. It's around 4:20 p.m. by this point, and Noemi doesn't go straight into panic mode. She asks Manny where his sister is, and, you know, he's 3, so he can't really, like, tell her much. But he points to an area behind the playground that had some maintenance sheds. And at first, Noemi thinks that Dulce Maria is just playing hide-and-seek or something like that, so she goes to look for her. She searches the park for another 10 to 15 minutes before realizing that this isn't a simple game of hide-and-seek. She then calls her brother, who lives nearby, and enlists him and his dog to help look for Dulce Maria. He gets there, but they still can't find the girl, so Noemi calls 911 about 45 minutes after she first notices that her daughter is missing. And this is the first reason, as you can imagine, why Noemi has faced a fair amount of criticism from the public. Like, how could she wait 45 minutes? Doesn't she love her daughter? Did she wait because she actually had something to do with it?
Okay, but to be fair, she didn't wait 45 minutes to begin looking for her.
Right.
Like, she immediately enlisted the help of her brother.
Mm-hmm.
So they started looking right away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you can second guess all of that as to whether she should have called 911 right away or not, but it's not like she was like, oh, well, I'll go back to the car.
Right.
You know,
she was, I'm sure she'll turn up. Yeah, like it wasn't,
she was actively doing things.
Well, exactly. And I can identify with this because I would imagine that a big part of Noemi didn't want to believe that Dulce Maria was actually gone. She was probably clinging to the hope that her daughter was just going to pop up. Plus, a huge issue in this case that I'll talk about more later is the distrust that the immigrant community feels toward the police. And I don't know if this was a factor in any of this for Noemi, and I don't believe that her immigration status is in question or anything like that, but that's not true of many people in her community. In fact, Noemi was actually pregnant at the time of Dulce Maria's disappearance, and once this became an actual investigation, the father of that child was detained by ICE after being interviewed about this by police. And so this is a community who rightly fears that any interaction with law enforcement can have unintended negative consequences for themselves or their loved ones. When Noemi and her brother failed to find Dulce Maria, however, she did call 911 shortly before 5 p.m. Police showed up and started searching the park. And, you know, when I first read about this story, I was thinking like, oh, it's a park, you know, whatever, like the ones we have around here, some grass, a few trees, a playground, not a big deal. But this park is around 1,000 acres.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a much larger undertaking than, you know, than I think people may realize.
Yeah.
So investigators searched that along with the adjoining neighborhoods and Sunset Lake, which was nearby, eventually calling the search off when it became too dark that night. The search resumed the next day with the assistance of a state police helicopter with infrared and a dive team for the lake. Neighborhood volunteers also came out to help search for the five-year-old. Police also interviewed people at the park, including a group of like 24 people who were playing basketball right around where Dulce Maria and her brother were playing. They remembered seeing kids, but they didn't witness anything out of the ordinary.
So it sounds like it was a pretty robust response.
Yeah,
at least
for
initially.
Sure. Absolutely.
I'm really keying in on her brother saying that, or pointing towards the maintenance sheds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to hold out my thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's going to come up later.
Yeah.
If not, I'll bring it up.
Well, no. And it really doesn't. So we should talk about that later. It was tough because, you know, he was 3. He didn't really say much, but there is somewhat of a language barrier. So Noemi does speak English. It is not her first language. So I think that between her statements and statements from her family, I think some things have gotten slightly muddled.
Okay.
I've read reports that said that Manny, you know, said that somebody took Dulce Maria, but like, I don't know that that's actually true. And you know, he said that somebody like took his ice cream, but I just don't know how much of that is just, you know, something a 3-year-old would
sure.
say. As the investigation went on Tuesday, police interviewed more people and re-interviewed others. This led to an Amber Alert being issued on Tuesday night, which says that Dulce Maria was taken by a light-skinned, possibly Hispanic man, about 5'6" tall. He was wearing orange tennis shoes, red pants, and a black shirt. He allegedly led the little girl from the playground into a red van with a sliding door and tinted windows, put her in the back seat, and drove off around 4:20 p.m. So basically right after they got to the park. As police are searching the park, the neighborhoods, and looking for a red van, they're also, of course, investigating the family. Police said that Noemi and her family were very cooperative and they searched their home several times with their permission. Of course, it's completely normal for police to look at the family as potential suspects in a case like this, but I mean, I'm sure it doesn't feel great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's hard not to, even if you understand intellectually, like it's hard not to have a negative emotional reaction
to
that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get these people coming into your home and basically violating your privacy, even if you do understand the reasons for it.
Right.
You know, there's got to be a sense of uncomfortableness associated with that.
Yeah, of course.
But the police, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have to.
Well, yeah.
They
because,
have to,
again,
at the
with
very
a minor
least to eliminate everybody
right
in the family right away.
Yeah. And statistically,
yes,
when a minor child goes missing, the family is the one responsible. Like, it's, that's just what it is, you know, except when it's not, right? But 99% of the time, it's the family or somebody close to the family. But again, on this podcast, we kind of cover more of the 1%. But Noemi told NJ Advance Media, quote, "The police think our family did this. They think I did something to her. I didn't. I love my daughter. I would never do nothing bad to her," end quote. And I will say that, yes, it is obviously 100% normal for police to look into the family. They need to look into the family. They have to look into the family. However, I will say that the questions that Noemi gets asked, not all of them are questions that your average white parent of a missing child get asked. I don't know for sure if police asked her this, but later on she was interviewed by Dr. Phil on his show, and he straight up asks her, "Did you sell your child?"
Okay, well, I have a huge problem with Dr. Phil.
Sure.
In general.
Yeah.
First off, he's not a doctor.
Right.
Has never been. And it drives me completely fucking crazy when, like, people refer to him as an expert on anything, because he's not. And nor am I claiming to be an expert on mental health, but I don't have a talk show. I don't have a show where I bring people on and accuse them of things, which is basically what he does for ratings.
Yeah. And so the thing about Dr. Phil about this episode is, I've seen clips, I didn't watch the whole segment, but it's so funny because, like, it's positive in the sense that I think he does have a lot of empathy for Dulce Maria. He wants to help her get found. He is bringing awareness to her case.
But then he brings up all of this negative shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, again, I mean, the idea of Dulce getting sold comes up several times, you know, from several different directions. And there's nothing that would at all indicate that's what happened, other than the fact that Noemi is socioeconomically disadvantaged. She is an immigrant. She had Dulce Maria when she was young, you know, things like that. Like, there's nothing in Noemi's actual history or actions or anything that would lead anybody to believe that.
Right.
You know,
and there's plenty of white women that, you know, have the same set of circumstances, but would never be asked that.
Exactly. So there's a lot of that in
also,
this.
Also, I would be more curious about Dulce's dad.
Oh, we'll talk about him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I get that he got deported to Mexico, but that doesn't mean he doesn't necessarily want to try to be in Dulce's life, or maybe have Dulce in his life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so he does pop up again in this, but there's just, I don't know, there's just a lot of social issues. But the one positive thing around this that I will say is the police and the community response. So the community response was very negative at times toward Noemi. However, there were a ton of volunteers who were working to find Dulce Maria. The police response seems to have been as good as it could have been, and still is, even 2 years later. Dulce Maria went missing on a Monday afternoon. By Wednesday, searchers' spirits were starting to flag, right? Because with most of these missing children's cases that happen in the world, not the ones we talk about, but in general, the child is found in a day or two.
Right.
So when it's Wednesday and they're finding no trace of her, you know, all of these volunteers who came out, who, like, just neighbors. I mean, these are just people who lived nearby who wanted to help find this little girl. They were just starting to get a little discouraged. Kristen Dill was one of the volunteers who came to search. She had no connection to the Alavez family and lived in the neighboring county. She just came because she wanted to help find Dulce Maria. She searched on Tuesday from 9 a.m. to 11:15 p.m. She told NJ.com on Wednesday, quote, "We've been everywhere. We've been on the raceway. We've been behind the zoo. We've been under bridges and bushes and trees. We've been absolutely everywhere and nothing. We're exhausted. We're tired and we're just praying to God. End quote. So remember how I told you that there's a lot of finger pointing toward Noemi and we're going to be talking about this?
Sure.
So just to give you a clear picture of how quickly it happened, Dulce Maria went missing on Monday, and by Thursday, the headline on NJ.com was, quote, "Mom of missing five-year-old Dulce Alves avoiding public after critical comments about her behavior," end quote.
So she's avoiding the public because...
people were already talking shit about her 3 days after her daughter disappeared. I mean, really, 1 day after her daughter disappeared. Noemi told reporters that she stopped going to the park where they were searching for Dulce because of the rude comments people kept on making about her and to her. She said, quote, "I didn't want them telling me things and be more depressed than I am now. They think I did something to her. I really love her a lot. I don't know why they are judging me," end quote. There was an incident on Tuesday, so the day after Dulce Maria disappeared, where volunteers got angry because Noemi was eating pizza. But, like, that was the first
she was eating?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that was the first thing she had eaten in 24 hours, like, since her daughter went missing, you know? And it was just one of those things where, like, yes, everything's terrible and she wants to find her daughter. But, like, yes, your body needs food. And I'm sure pizza was just there, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure it was donated by
some
local restaurant or whatever.
So then they gathered in a circle and, like, watched her as they pulled up to her Facebook page on their phone.
What is wrong with people?
I don't know. So then people who were there started going on her Facebook page and, like, leaving comments on old photos. Like, they just started digging through her page. And apparently there's, like, some old photo of her smoking pot. And, you know, that became a whole big thing. Again, not that it matters, but she then, like, had to go and tell reporters, like, that was an old photo. I don't do that. I'm a different person. Blah, blah, blah. But, like, that's what we're dealing with here. People immediately started picking her apart.
Yeah, and I'm sure all of these people that were doing that, none of them have old photos of them drinking or doing anything illicit or illegal. I'm sure everybody there was just completely, like, the best people out there.
Yeah, right? And it's like, okay, yes, putting a picture of yourself, like, smoking pot on Facebook isn't the greatest idea, but... she was a teenager.
It's also, that's not an...
it has nothing to do with this.
Indictment of anything.
No. She was a teenager and she admitted, she said, listen, yes, I have had issues with drugs. I've had issues with alcohol. I've had issues with depression.
And I'm sure this isn't helping.
Right? Exactly. And so this is the shit she was dealing with 24 hours after her daughter was taken. People also just started spreading rumors and making things up out of whole cloth. Noemi told reporters, quote, "They're saying I didn't love my kids and I just gave my kids away to someone and that supposedly my mom was prostituting me," end quote.
What the hell?
Exactly. Like, how many cases have we covered of white children who went missing and, like, nobody's accusing the mom of, like, prostituting? Like, it's unbelievable. And it would be one thing if, because again, I'm not saying that this never happens, right? Like, of course, things happen. There are bad people in the world, but there is literally zero evidence of any of this ever happening at all. But it should be mentioned that police apparently didn't turn up anything incriminating during their searches, their multiple searches of the Alves home or of Noemi's car, which they also searched, or her cell phone.
Right. But yes, the preliminary search to eliminate family members is absolutely necessary. However, I'm sure that part of them going back and researching things, researching, is probably brought on by these rumors, by things that they're hearing that they have to investigate,
right,
to re-eliminate her as a suspect, which should not be happening because people are dicks.
Yeah. So there was a lot of that. But again, I mean, nothing seems to have been found at all.
Are we going to get into specifics of who the police interviewed? I really want to know if they talked to any of the maintenance workers that were around that day, in particular around the maintenance shed.
None of the articles that I was able to read, and because this is such a recent case, like there were a lot. Yeah. NJ.com extensively covered this case. I didn't read anything about that. I just read more general terms about how they followed a ton of tips.
And I'm sure that they're also not going to, because it's so recent, right, they're not going to release a whole lot of information.
Yeah. So they don't get into the specifics like that, but it does seem as though everybody who was around.
And do we know where that, the description of that potential suspect came from?
It actually came from a child who was there. So that kind of throws a little bit of a wrench into things, I'll kind of get into later. But that's why we actually don't have a sketch of the suspect in this, because it came from a child. So they weren't able to give enough details to make a police sketch.
But they got some general information.
Correct. And there more witnesses do come forward with additional information. On October 23rd, 2019, about 5 weeks after Dulce Maria's abduction, her family returned to the park from where she went missing. They held a press conference in which they basically asked the community not to give up hope. They were also planning to do a new search and flyer distribution. The search would cover new areas, including nearby farms. And there was actually a sketch released around this time, but not of the suspect. There was another man who police call a potential witness. Apparently, he was also at the park that day with two children under the age of 5. He was described as Hispanic, about 5 feet 7 inches tall, with a slender build and about 30 to 35 years old. He was wearing a white t-shirt, jeans, and a white baseball cap. Now, there is a sketch of this man, like I said, and that is on our blog, so I do encourage everybody to take a look. But this is not the same man who was described by the child as the one they saw putting Dulce Maria into the red van. They don't give any other information as to, like, where this, you know, witness sighting came from, or like what they think he saw or anything like that. Again, because they need to kind of,
at this point, they need to keep everything close to the vest.
Exactly. But we do have a sketch of him, but yeah, it is not the same man. So the suspect is clean shaven. This guy has some facial hair. He's a little bit taller, things like that. By the time the investigation hit the 2-month mark, it was still active. Investigators have been questioning nearby registered sex offenders and pulling surveillance video. There weren't cameras at the park itself, but police pulled video from nearby businesses and homes, but they never found any footage of Dulce Maria or her kidnapper. So as of today, I mean, the last actual known footage of Dulce Maria is from the Sunoco.
Oh, Sunoco.
Yeah, when she was buying ice cream.
And there's no footage of a red van leaving.
Thankfully, though, this doesn't seem to be one of those cases where the police are disinterested because of who the victim is or who their family is. Bridgeton police and the community saw that there was a 5-year-old girl missing and seemingly did everything they could do to try to find her. Bridgeton Police Chief Michael Gamari told reporters, quote, "Cops are humans. We all have kids. We can sympathize with how we would feel if it happened to one of our family members," end quote. And like, yes, this is so self-evident, and it blows my mind that this isn't how all of these cases are treated. We saw this last week with Sage Smith.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost absurd that needs to be said in a press briefing. It's absurd that as a chief of police, you have to humanize your your police officers.
Right. And you have to say, listen, I know you're concerned, but I do have the bare amount of human empathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and I'm not knocking him.
No.
Obviously, that chief of police has to do that, but yeah. It's just absurd that that's where we are.
Yeah, this isn't a criticism of him.
No, not at all.
But yeah, like he honestly does have to say, like, no, I understand that this little girl is a person.
Yeah, like you said. We've seen it here and on more than one case, not just...
Oh, no. Sage Smith was just the last one.
Yeah.
Chief Guimari also assured reporters that this case remained their top priority, saying, quote, it's still on the top burner and it will remain on that top burner until we develop that information crucial to the case, end quote. He also urged residents to think about who this abductor might be. For instance, don't necessarily focus on the description of the person, but think about anyone you may know who started displaying anxiety or irritability around the time Dulce Maria went missing. Maybe they changed their appearance or started increasing alcohol or drug use. If Dulce was abducted by a stranger, it could be someone who knows the park and is a regular in the area and wouldn't ordinarily arouse suspicion.
That's a really good tactic, getting the word out. It's probably going to lead to a lot of dead-end leads, but
sure,
absolutely employ the locals to give any information that you can, especially because this doesn't seem like, I mean, obviously it's a stranger abduction, but it doesn't seem like it was something that was planned. It seems like it was a crime of opportunity. So somebody, yes, that is there frequently, or if it's a pedophile, they're targeting the park, so they're probably staking the park out, certain aspects of it.
Right.
So it is probably somebody that the general public has seen if somebody else frequents the park.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a brilliant tactic,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah. And I think it's just a different way to think about it, right?
Yeah. Employ the help of the general public instead of saying, nah, we got this, we're the cops.
Or the flip side, which we also see, which is expecting the general public to just do your job for you.
Yes.
Which I don't think this is what it is, because it is so important. You need the public to help you solve these cases.
Absolutely.
Like,
yes.
These cases don't get solved without the help of the public, but they can't be completely solved by the public either, right?
Yes.
So it sounds to me, in this case, the Bridgeton police were doing what they needed to do on their end while asking the public for help on their end.
And doing it right away.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. This like happens immediately. This
because
isn't
they
like
don't, they don't
20
wait
years
until
later, they're
yes,
like, oh,
exactly.
Hey.
Exactly. They don't wait until it's a cold case and then ask for help. It's
no.
The missing persons cases, as police officers, we've talked about this before. You're already behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
You know, and even in an instance like this where you're talking about a 45-minute gap before, which is not long.
No.
But that's 45 minutes where a potential abductor is gone.
Yeah.
And you don't know where they're going.
No, and we've had cases where the gap is 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter. Like, it's just, it takes no time at all. And as investigators, you're right. You're behind the eight ball. Like, you're playing catch up by definition.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly, incredibly difficult.
Yeah. So absolutely get the help of the general public for witnesses.
Yeah. ASAP.
Yeah. And also do your job.
Right.
You know, so those two things combined, it's the best effort.
Yeah. And it may not result in a happy ending for everyone, but, like, again, you just got to go to bed knowing that you did everything you could, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, and I think that a lot of these officers can do that.
Sounds like it.
And in November of 2019, so, you know, just a few months later, police acknowledged that the fear of law enforcement within the immigrant community was probably hindering their investigation. People who may have had information very well could be keeping it to themselves out of fear of retaliation. And again, the father of Noemi's third child was detained by ICE after being questioned in this case. But honestly, that sounds like it was more of an issue of like the right hand not communicating with the left hand, because the investigators who are actually working this case have tried to make it abundantly clear that they do not care about immigration status, that they are not going to hassle people over that. They just care about finding this little girl.
I'm curious then how ICE became aware of him being in, well, I shouldn't say that because we don't know how ICE picked him up.
Right. All we know is that he was detained after being interviewed. Right. And it very well could be that Bridgeton Police's normal mode of operation is like, hey, we brought this guy in for questioning. And like, let me just like call my ICE guy too, just to like give them a heads up. But then now they're saying, you know what, we don't want to do that because we understand that's important for people to come forward. I don't know. I don't know how they normally operate.
No, I mean, something like that would be a simple NCIC run.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody gets brought in for questioning, I don't think that they do an NCIC run if they're not a suspect.
Well, everyone was a suspect, though, at that point.
But also, to your point, the investigator said that they're not interested in that. So
right.
If you do an NCIC run and an immigration status issue comes up, it doesn't alert ICE. That's an extra step that would have to be taken by the police.
Right.
So again, we don't know how he was detained. So we don't know if that was like completely separate. So like if he had gotten pulled over.
Oh yeah.
And they ran his driver's license in NCIC or whatever, that also would have come up. So that right. could have been completely separate.
It could have. And it could have been something where he was brought in for questioning, they ran him, whatever. And it wasn't the detective on Dulce Maria's case who's like, let me call ICE. It was some other officer who was tangentially involved.
Yeah. I mean, that's less likely No, just knowing the way police operations work, and nobody's going to go out of their way to like run this person.
Mm.
If you're not directly involved with the case.
Yeah.
I think that's less likely. I think it's again, unless there's evidence that he was detained from the custody of.
Right. And I don't know. So the articles that I read said that he was detained shortly after being interviewed in this case, but regardless, It doesn't ultimately matter, right? Because the effect is people
it stokes the in the community, of the community
are like, oh shit, they interviewed him and then ICE shows up.
And deport him.
Right? Like, and he didn't get deported to my knowledge, but, you know, it was still a whole thing.
Sure.
Chief Gaimari said that his department was planning on making additional outreach efforts to the community and confirmed that anyone with information is eligible for the reward in this case, regardless of their immigration status. So if you are undocumented, and I'm just making this clear because this is still true, if you are undocumented, you are still eligible for this reward if you have information leading to solving this case.
Good.
As another month passed, volunteers continued to blanket the area with flyers in addition to courting media attention. So one thing that some volunteers and the family learned after kind of the first batch of flyers and everything happened was that like when they came back to re-canvass and give out more flyers, and this had been getting a ton of media attention and been all over Facebook and social media, that they were still reaching people nearby who had no idea that this little girl had gone missing. So that was why they were really, really focusing on giving out flyers and just like physical things for people to hold in their hands, because a lot of the community, you know, just didn't know about this from Facebook or NJ.com, you know?
Right.
In December of 2019, Dulce Maria's case was featured on Dr. Phil, as I mentioned. And he pledged an additional $23,000 to the reward fund bringing it up to a total of $75,000. So again, it's like, it's so tough because he really attacked Noemi in some ways that I think other women wouldn't have been attacked, but he did bring a bunch of awareness to this case and he got the reward fund up to $75,000.
Maybe his intention was to squash those rumors right away, but the better way to approach it would just be to not bring them up because he's reaching an audience bigger than the community of New Jersey.
For sure.
So just play it as a straightforward missing 5-year-old
Yeah, but
girl.
I mean, again, the way TV works, the way his show works, I think you have to have
that's
that
what I'm
clip
saying. It's ratings.
Because that's the clip, right? Yes. Like if you look this up, that is the first thing you see. Like you didn't sell your daughter, did you? So that's what it is. And so it's just like it's a bit of a deal with the devil, but you know, it got her case national attention. But despite the large reward and the involvement of the Bridgeton police, the county prosecutor's office, the New Jersey State Police, and the FBI, investigators didn't seem to be any closer to finding Dulce Maria. 2019 turned to 2020 with no new leads and no answers. Then, in March, right as the nation was about to be gripped by the coronavirus pandemic, three letters showed up in Ohio. And one of these days, I'll give you a better warning when we're going to have a two-parter episode, but today is not that day. I'm sorry, we've got these letters in Ohio, and there's so much more stuff going on, you know? I didn't mean it, but it's such a recent case that there's just a lot of information out there, and I want to try to cover it as fully as I can.
You're killing me with the two episode cases.
I know, and I'm sorry. I hope you guys are okay with them, but I'd rather do that than like leave a bunch of details out that could be potentially important.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, but God.
I know, it's annoying. I'm sorry.
You either need to write less or I need to talk less.
One of the two. I don't know. But yeah, so this was one of those cases that I just kind of fell down a rabbit hole. And as soon as I got to these letters that were sent last March in Ohio, like it just went on from there. Because I really did think I was wrapping the story up. And then it was all of a sudden, oh, hey, this incredibly creepy thing happened. So that's where we're going to end this week. Next week, we will bring you part two of Dulce Maria Alavez's story. We will wrap it up. I really encourage you to go on her blog, go online, and look at pictures of this little girl. Because, again, this is a recent case. They need to find her. So especially if you're in the New Jersey area, but even if you're not, take a look at her, you know, just know who she is, know what she looks like, and keep an eye out. If you're a member of our Patreon and our higher tiers, you will be able to get an early access to this episode. It'll probably be up in the next day or two. For everybody else, it will be up next Wednesday. And then the following Wednesday is our 1-year anniversary.
I can't believe it's been 1 year.
I know, it's crazy. Technically, it's not. So next Wednesday is the 28th. We released our first episode on the 29th of July last year, but you know, we publish on Wednesdays and that's the closest one. So to celebrate our 1-year milestone, we are going to kind of do a special episode. When we started this was a quarantine project and it was just a result of my incredibly high stress levels with work and just, you know, being stuck inside and just losing my mind. So I finally decided to do this, but we didn't start out really knowing what we were doing. Poor Ethan, my God, he barely even listens to podcasts. And
yeah,
I just roped
no
him
idea
into this. Yeah. You didn't know
what
to
I
do.
Was doing. I didn't yeah know what I should say or could say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I have been doing podcasts, not publishing them, but I've been like guesting on podcasts since literally 2008, 2007,
yeah,
something like that. It was a little more normal for me. And I think that it definitely took you a little while to really figure out, like you said, what you could say, what you're supposed to say, things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But What we are going to do is actually re-record our very first episode, also because I didn't know what I was doing in terms of recording and editing, and the sound is terrible.
Well, we also had different equipment, and yeah, we were in a space that was not ideal
for recording at all. No, and now we're like in the underground layer. So yeah, so we're going to re-record that episode, but it's going to be a lot different, and not just quality wise, because if you've been a regular listener, you'll realize that yes, I write these episodes and I write the story out, but Ethan doesn't know about the episodes or about the cases. And granted, he obviously will know about this one.
I also have the worst memory. Yeah, so he does. Aside from knowing that the kid's name is JR, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So I'm going to present this in the way that I did the first time, but this is Ethan Flick almost 40 episodes in. So it's a whole new ball game. So we're going to get, because we don't script what you say. We don't, you know, we don't script our discussions or little asides.
No. And the first couple of times we were recording this, there, you and I would have discussions afterwards.
Right. Where you'd actually talk to me.
Yeah. Where then I start theorizing the case and you're like, wait, damn it, we need to go back and record exactly what you're saying. And then the mic would turn on and be like, I don't remember what I said.
Yeah. It was a little frustrating. So yeah, so we're going to re-record our first episode, and that is what we're going to be releasing on Wednesday, July 28th. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, I hope you all, like I said, go to our blog, go to our website, keep an eye out, and get to know Dulce Maria Alves. And we will see you next week with the conclusion of her story.
See you next week.
Dulce Maria Alves has been missing from Bridgeton, New Jersey since September 16, 2019. She was 3'5" and between 60 and 70 pounds. She was wearing a yellow t-shirt with an elephant and black and white checked pants with flowers at the time of her disappearance. She was 5 years old when she disappeared. She would be 7 today. If you have any information on Dulce Maria Alves's disappearance, please call the New Jersey State Police Missing Persons Unit at 609-882-2000, extension 2554, or the Bridgeton Police Department at 856-451-0033. You can also call the FBI's toll-free tip line at 1-800-CALL-FBI and select option 4, then select option 8, or submit an anonymous tip to the agency online. Spanish speakers can call 856-207-2732. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles, from sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.